For your meditation, breathe deeply and know that even the smallest moment of risk and trust is difficult. Center yourself and meditate on a chasm of your own making. It might be a trench of stubbornness or pride that no one can cross, or the echo of your own pain that isolates you, or the vastness that builds when you are afraid to tell someone the truth of your heart, or the absence of belief that you deserve what waits on the other side. Lean into your chasm gently until the fear subsides. Lean into your chasm and offer, through your breathing, a wordless compassion for yourself and all others in our very human struggle to step with risk and land with trust. April 18th. The Purpose of Full Attention. This is the ongoing purpose of full attention, to find a thousand ways to be pierced into wholeness. A most profound and helpful learning came to me when struggling with the pain of having a rib removed. For weeks, I felt a corset of pain girdling each breath, but watching the winter water of a stream begin to thaw and flow over and over, I finally saw that to make it through the pain, I had to be more like water and less like ice. For when trees fell into the ice, the river shattered. But when large limbs fell into the flowing water, the river embraced the weight and flowed around it. The trees and winter water were teaching me that the pain was more pointed and hurtful when I was tense and solid as ice. Then each breath was shattering. But when I could thaw the fear and tenseness I carried, the pain was more absorbed, and I could, like the thawing stream, move on, not pain-free, but no longer shattered. It's this way with much of nature. By opening fully to our own experience, we can feel and see the resilience of life around us. Feeling our woundedness, we can learn from the hollowed stump how to root smaller greens. Feeling our sadness, we can learn from the leaves too tired to be blown along how to surrender. Feeling our tenderness, we can learn from the caterpillar how to endure the tremble that precedes the appearance of wings. But it's only by showing up, by denying nothing, that other living things reveal to us the secrets of how they manage to live. In deep counterpoint to the old saying, an eye for an eye, there is a deeper law that guides us to wholeness, a truth of being for a truth of being. So the purpose of full attention is to invite through personal surrender the particular example of life force in whatever is around us to show itself, a truth of being for a truth of being. Yes, when in pain, be like flowing water. When suffering near the bottom, feed off what you can, like the brilliant ocean fish, and spit back the rest. When feeling burdened, watch small birds to see how they begin to fly. When feeling finished, watch newborn animals open their wet little eyes and imitate their innocence. Once giving full attention, you will come back, one drop at a time, into the tide of the living. This is also a walking meditation. Meditate on a particular pain that is troubling you. As you walk about, breathe steadily and see through the lens of this pain, not to turn everything into your pain, but to locate something that might teach you about pain. Look for something that resembles your pain. It might be a bottle abandoned, once broken, or a slim branch splitting, or a fence sagging. It could be a shrub aching to bloom. Breathe steadily, and by feeling your pain while watching, invite this piece of life to open its secret to you. April 19th. Outwaiting clouds. The bud in half bloom outwaits the cloud. Some days I wake with a cloud around my heart, and it dulls everything except the weight I carry deep inside. Yet just because I can't make it to the light today doesn't mean that the light has vanished. In truth, the heart, like the earth, is continually blanketed by ever-changing atmospheres that come and go between who we are and how we live our days. So faith, it seems, can be defined as the effort to believe in light when we're covered by clouds. And though it feels like the sun will never come again, the truth is it has never stopped burning its light. In fact, its heat and warmth is burning steadily right now on the far side of whatever cloud we're under. If we could only suspend our judgment when clouded in the heart, for many skepticisms are born from conclusions drawn while unable to see, as if any kind of understanding will prevent the clouds from coming or going again and again. But no cloud lasts forever. The earth and all that grows from it knows this well. So does the heart and everything that grows from it, in spite of all our very understandable pains. For your meditation, sit outside when you can and watch the clouds come and go. Breathe slowly and evenly and feel the sky open and close above you. Note how the trees and flowers do not collapse when the clouds roll in. Draw strength from this. April 20th. Birds and ornithologists. Birds don't need ornithologists to fly. We spend so much time wanting to be seen and named as intelligent or good, or handsome or pretty or successful, or popular or as nobody's fool. Yet the spirit doesn't know it's being spiritual, any more than water rushing knows it's a stream. And the heart doesn't know it's expanding with compassion, any more than a hawk spreading its wings knows it's being a hawk. Nor does someone acting out of love often realize they are being kind. From an early age, we are taught that to live fully is to be accepted, and to be accepted, we need to be seen. So we base success and even love on the effort to be seen, on how much we stand out. However, the often painful truth we discover along the way is that to survive in an inner way that matters, that keeps us connected to all that has ever lived and is living, we sorely need to know how to be accepting. By this I don't mean being passive. By this I mean inhabiting our capacity to see and affirm the common pulse of life we find in others, no matter how different they may seem from us. When we do this, we no longer need to be different to be valued, and no longer need to be accepted to know love. In short, we no longer need an audience to fly. We simply have to extend our sincerity to each abiding day, and we will be in accord with all that is valuable. Like flowers waiting on rain, our hearts wait on love. As much as we want to be seen and known, it is the giving of attention that keeps us awake, for giving attention opens us to love, and accepting that deep things wait like seed between us is believing in the world. So wake me by accepting me, and the world will sprout us up like grass. For your meditation, be still, close your eyes, and quiet your mind until you feel the air as you breathe. On the in-breath, open yourself to what it feels like to get attention. On the out-breath, open yourself to what it feels like to give attention. As you breathe, allow yourself to feel how the two merge, in and out, get and give. As they merge, consider what it means to you to be awake. April 21st, the gift of surprise. Another name for God is surprise. Brother David Stendel Rust. While rushing to complete your dearest plans that you tell no one, you can bump into another and groceries will fly, and while picking up the ketchup, you might fall in love. Or in your second year of college, while studying what mommy and daddy want you to be, you can accidentally open a book on Albert Schweitzer and discover that you feel compelled to go to Africa. Or understanding geometry, you might decide to become a gardener, finding endless joy in creating landscapes. Or the death of your grandmother might open a side of you that is starving for history. In my case, losing a rib to cancer made me discover the Adam in me. It seems that any moment of interest or pain or adversity can surprise us into the larger totality of life, breaking our current limits and allowing us the chance to redefine ourselves in regard to the larger sense that is upon us. That we are opened so suddenly, so often, is the way the soul unfolds on earth. We can never be prepared for everything. No one person can anticipate all of life. In fact, over-preparation is yet another way to wall ourselves in from life. Rather, we can only prepare for how we might respond to the gift of surprise that often moves in on us faster than our reflex to resist. Life is surprising, thank God, and God, the chance to know oneness, lives in surprise. For God is seldom in our plans, but always in the unexpected. For your meditation, center yourself and pray for the strength of spirit to be open to surprise. As you exhale, try to relax your resistance to the unexpected. As you inhale, try to make a passageway for everything larger than you. Enter your day. April 22nd. It is enough. If you can't see what you're looking for, see what's there. One of the most difficult things for us to accept is that beneath all our dreams and disappointments, we live and breathe in abundance. It's hard when in pain to believe that all we ever need is before us, around us, within us, and yet it's true. Like leafless trees waiting for morning, something as great and constant as the earth holds us up and turns us ever so slowly toward the light. Our task is only to be rooted and patient. Never was this more true for me than during the aftermath of my first chemo treatment. I was in a Holiday Inn at 5 in the morning, after 24 hours of vomiting every 20 minutes. I was slumped on the floor, holding the space of a rib that had been removed 3 weeks earlier, and my wife, in anger, in panic, in desperation, called out, "Where is God?" And from some unknown place in me, through my pale, slouched form, I uttered, "Here, right here." The presence of God has never eliminated pain, only made it more bearable. Now when things don't go the way I want, I try to kiss what waits beneath all I want. Now when the car breaks down, though I get angry, I try to hear the weeds in the ditch as they point me to the sky. Now when the vase drops from my hand and shatters, though I whine, I try to see beneath my reflection in the pool of flower water. Now when hurt, I try to feel my way through the tangle of my very normal reactions into the quiet underlying all experience. Mysterious as it is, no matter our pain or excitement, Our drama or circumstance, all that we could hope for is here. We lack nothing. The humble challenge of being human is not in agreeing or disputing this truth. That's as fruitless as arguing against gravity. Our humble way, if we can open it, is to root ourselves beneath the thousand dreams and excuses that keep us from the ground we walk. Time and again, we're asked to outlast what we want and hope for in order to see what's there. It is enough. For your meditation, choose a favorite tree or plant, and though you may not see anything, watch it grow. Know that as you watch it grow, the earth is carrying it toward the sun. Imagine yourself as such a tree or plant. Close your eyes and know that though you may not see anything, you are growing, and that something larger than you is carrying you toward the light. Though none of it is visible, feel this mystery and whisper aloud, I am growing. I am being carried toward the light. I lack nothing. April 23rd. Playing small. There will never be an us if I play small. Sharon Preece. In Dante's Divine Comedy, the only difference between the lovers who find themselves enduring hell and the lovers working their way through paradise is that those in hell have no individual center, and so they spin in endless identification with each other. Hard as it is, we can't shrink from our relationships, or we simply become an audience or gopher for the dominant partner or friend. Like most of us, I've struggled with this my whole life, fearful of what might happen if I actually voice my concerns and needs, surprised that doing so, while not always easy or pleasant, always enables me to be myself more fully. Then, not by chance, I'm always more able to feel and see the world around me. I bring more to the scene and am revitalized more readily by my daily experience. The great philosopher Martin Buber, who believed that God is most deeply known through relationship, spoke to the heart of this paradox. He said that before there can be a true relationship, there must be two separate beings who can relate. Most of our life experience bears this out. Unless we work to be ourselves, we can never truly know others or the numinous world we live in. For your meditation, as you breathe, do not disappear. Sit quietly, and as you inhale, realize that the expansion of your spirit is what knows the world. During your day, when feeling small, inhale slowly and present yourself again to all that is around you. April 24th. Love like water. Only love with no thought of return can soften the point of suffering. Water in its clear softness fills whatever hole it finds. It's not skeptical or distrusting. It doesn't say this gully is too deep or that field is too open. Like water, the miracle of love is that it covers whatever it touches, making the touched thing grow while leaving no trace of its touch. True, the faces of shores and the arms of cliffs are worn to bone, but this is beyond the water's doing. This is the progress of life, of which water is but an element. Most things break instead of transform because they resist. The quiet miracle of love is that without our interference, it, like water, accepts whatever is tossed or dropped or placed into it, embracing it completely. Of course, we're human and are easily hurt, if not loved back, or if loved poorly. But we waste so much of life's energy by deliberating who and what shall be worthy of our love, when in the deepest elemental sense, these choices are not in our province, any more than rain can choose what it shall fall upon. Certainly we need to make decisions. Who will I spend time with? Who will I learn from? Who will I live with? Who will I marry? But beneath all that, the element of love doesn't stop being elemental. It doesn't stop covering everything before it. And over a lifetime, the pain of withholding this great and quiet force is more damaging than the pain of being rejected or loved poorly. For love, like water, can be dammed, but toward what end? In truth, the more we let love flow through, the more we have to love. This is the inner glow that sages and saints of all ages seem to share, the wash of their love over everything before them, not just people, but birds and rocks and flowers and air. Beneath the many choices we have to make, love, like water, flows back into the world through us. It's the one great secret available to all. Yet somewhere, the misperception has been enshrined that to withhold love will stop hurt. In truth, it's the other way around. As water soaks scars, love soothes our wounds. If open to it, love will accept the angrily thrown stone, and our small tears will lose some of their burn in the great ocean of tears, and the arrow released to the bottom of the river will lose its point. For your meditation, choose a quiet spot, and in that quiet moment, open to the water of spirit that runs beneath everything. Let the energy of love rise from you to the simple objects before you. Feel the energy of love in the air surrounding the chair or cup or pencil or piece of broken window. Imagine you are the broken window or pencil. Feel the air on your skin of glass or wood. Look upon this one single object the way you would a lover. Without naming this, just feel the intensity of attention coming from you with no particular place to go. April 25th. The courage to join. The real story comes from a love source that can't be understood with intellect, but known only as a person is known. Coleman Barks. Living in modern times has turned us into watchers, placing a sliver of distance between us and everything we meet. It's this watching that disheartens our days, that takes the color out of the earth and makes the songs of time sound flat. The Native American view on this is healing. With respect for all aspects of creation, we're asked to honor whatever we see, rock, rain, fence, or stranger, as a member of our family. By honoring all things as living, the courage to join with the universe becomes a manner of being that can happen even while sitting still. In knowing the world this way, there is no such thing as metaphor. The wind is not like God's voice. The wind is God's voice. Memories are not images of loved ones returning to us. They are the spirits of loved ones visiting us. It takes courage to remove the sliver of distance we carry around our necks, but the reward is a world alive and not dead. Such courage lets the juices of the world flow. For your meditation, sit quietly and center yourself. After a time, imagine that the things about you, window, tree, rug, bed, your door, are alive in the way that plants are alive. As you breathe, feel their energies breathe. Through your heart's beating, take the chance to welcome them. April 26th. The way is hard but clear. Though it is the hardest going, the way is clear. The naturalist and environmentalist Kevin Scribner tells us that salmon make their way upstream by bumping repeatedly into blocked pathways till they find where the current is strongest. Somehow they know that the unimpeded rush of water means that there is no obstacle there, and so they enter this opening fervently, for though it's the hardest going, the way is clear. The lesson here is as unnerving as it's helpful. In facing both inner and outer adversities, the passage of truth comes at us with a powerful momentum because it's clear and unimpeded, and so, where we sense the rush of truth is where we must give our all. As human beings, the blocked pathways of our journey can take many forms, and whether it be in avoiding conflict with others, or in not taking the risk to love, or in not accepting the call of spirit that would have us participate more fully in our days, it is often easier to butt up continually against these blocked pathways than to enter fervently the one passage that is so powerfully clear. In this regard, salmon innately model a healthy persistence by showing us how to keep nosing for the unimpeded way, and once finding it, how to work even harder to make it through. Some say it's easier for salmon since the power of their drive to end where they begin is not compromised by the endless considerations that often keep us from the truth. Still, it's the heart's capacity to rise one more time after falling down, no matter how bruised, that verifies that such a drive lives in us too. Like salmon, our way depends not just on facing things head on, but in moving our whole being through. For your meditation, center yourself and bring to mind something you are avoiding. It might be making a life decision or asking for what you need in a relationship. Breathe evenly and nose around the energy of the avoidance. What are you butting up against? Identify the resistance. Which part is coming from you? Which part from others? Breathe steadily and look for the rush of truth in all this. Feel for the clear and forceful way coming at you. For today, simply feel the power of the way that is clear and keep it before you. April 27th. Let there be light. Just trust yourself. Then you will know how to live. Goethe. When Edison was discovering the light bulb, he first engaged in the process of envisioning how an unseeable current of energy could be harnessed and turned into light. Like most of us, the vision came first. Once he understood what came to him, it took quite some time to find the precise material that would work as a filament in the bulb itself. Later, when asked if he ever grew discouraged or thought he was wasting his time, Edison said no. He learned something important each time he tried. He learned that there was another material not to be used. The lessons here are very telling and transferable, especially to how we seek our calling in the world and to how we seek out love. To be willing to envision what we need is powerful and real, and just as crucial is the confidence of spirit to know it will work even though we haven't found where we belong or whom to love yet. Equally as vital is the perseverance in trying to find precisely what will work. But perhaps the most inspiring part of Edison's journey is how he didn't view his many attempts as any type of failure on his part, but rather as an inevitable part of the process of discovery. Finally, after all of this, we are challenged, scientist and lover alike, to use what we discover and live in the light. For your meditation, center yourself and as you breathe, envision what you need to live more fully. As you inhale, commit to trying to find this today without judging what happens. As you exhale, commit to making use of whatever it is you discover. April 28th, Wu Feng. In the end, it is not enough to think what we know. We must live it. For only by living it can love show itself as the greatest principle. The way that heat allows ice to thaw and irrigate the earth, so our capacity to embody what we know, our quiet need to bring what lives within into accord with how we meet the days, this ancient act of integrity allows love to show itself as the deepest sort of gravity. There was a quiet man whose life-changing moment of such courage is inspiring. He was Wu Feng, a Manchurian diplomat of the 1700s, who was posted with an Aboriginal tribe in the outskirts of Taiwan. Wu Feng befriended the Aboriginal chief, whose tribe beheaded one of its members every year as a form of sacrifice. Each year Wu Feng pleaded, with all of his compassion and reverence for life, that the chief put an end to this custom. The chief would listen respectfully as Wu Feng would plead, and then, after listening and bowing, the chief would summon the chosen tribe member and, without hesitation, behead him. Finally, after living with the tribe for 25 years, Wu Feng once more pleaded with the chief to stop this senseless killing. But this time, when the tribe member was called forth, Wu Feng took his place and said, "If you will kill this time, it will be me." The chief stared long into his friend's eyes, and having grown to love Wu Feng, he could not kill him. From that day, the practice of beheading stopped. Of course, Wu Feng could have been killed, but his courage shows us that at a certain point, how we live inside takes priority. At a certain point, for each of us, talk evaporates and words cannot bring love into the open. Only the soul's presence coming from us can attract the soul's presence in others. For your meditation, as you breathe, be honest with yourself. That is, see things in your life as they are. Is there a situation in your life in which a part of you is being sacrificed, like the member of the Aboriginal tribe? Are you repeatedly being asked to deny who you are in some relationship? If so, can the Wu Feng in you stop talking and make itself present? If the answer is yes, simply honor that such a spirit of embodiment lives within you. Simply ask the question today. Trust your spirit to know when and how to do so. April 29th, Within Young Leaves. Wrapped within young leaves, the sound of water. Sosaki. This delicate observation by this Japanese poet is filled with the quiet hope that embedded in our nature, even as we begin, is our gift already unfolded. Embedded in the seed is the blossom. Embedded in the womb is the child fully grown. Embedded in the impulse to care is the peace of love realized. Embedded in the edge of risk and fear is the authenticity that makes life worth living. Wrapped within young leaves is the sound of water that will nourish them once they have opened. It's already there, prompting them to unfold and grow. To believe that this is possible requires a faith in currents larger than any one mind can envision. But that is not such a difficult thing to accept. For as dust owes its path to wind, we as human beings are asked to acknowledge that something larger encircles us and prompts us to unfold. There is a gravity of spirit that pulls the essence of who we are into being. Our job, like all our sister creatures, is to find the abundance of air and water and light and to unfold what is already within us. For your meditation, sit quietly and imagine your heart is a young leaf, green and tender, wrapped unto itself. As you breathe, feel the water of life already in your veins. As you breathe, stand and outstretch your arms and feel who you are unfold. April 30th. One constant arrival. Whether drifting through life on a boat or climbing toward old age leading a horse, each day is a journey, and the journey itself is home. Basho. 22 years ago, as my journey through cancer was beginning, my grandmother was dying. I didn't know I had cancer, but I believe she knew she was dying. I could tell because when I'd visit her in Kingsbrook Medical Center in Brooklyn, she would sit on the edge of her bed and peer off into some distance she alone could see. She was 94, and I had the feeling that she was imagining the other shore the way she did when she was 10, crossing the Atlantic on a crowded steamship that was trudging through the huge waves. Life for her was one endless immigration, one constant arrival in a new land. Perhaps this is why I'm a poet, because immigration is in my blood. Perhaps this is why I understand the world of experience as one vast ocean we never stop crossing, even at death. I'm asking you to imagine the life of your spirit on earth as such an immigration, as one constant arrival in a new land. Given this, we must accept that no matter the shore before us, the swell and toss of the sea never ends. When brought to the crest of a swell, we can see as far as eternity, and the soul has its perspective. But when in the belly of those waves, we are each of us for the moment lost. The life of the soul on earth has us bobbing on a raft of flesh, in and out of view of eternity. And the work of the inner pilgrim is to keep eternity in our heart and mind's eye when dropped in the belly of our days. For your meditation, sit quietly and imagine yourself bobbing safely on the ocean of experience we never stop crossing. Breathe deeply and imagine each day is a wave. Enter your own rhythms and feel what kind of wave today is. If today is cresting, look about you and take in all that you can see of life. If today is a belly of a day, acknowledge the hardships you are facing. Breathe slowly and remember that another crest is coming. Bring to mind the last rising, remembering what that enabled you to see.
May 1st. Burying and Planting. The culmination of one love, one dream, one self, is the anonymous seed of the next. There's very little difference between burying and planting. For often we need to put dead things to rest so that new life can grow. And further, the thing put to rest, whether it be a loved one, a dream, or a false way of seeing, becomes the fertilizer for the life about to form. As the well-used thing joins with the earth, the old love fertilizes the new. The broken dream fertilizes the dream yet conceived. The painful way of being that strapped us to the world fertilizes the freer inner stance about to unfold. This is very helpful when considering the many forms of self we inhabit over a lifetime. One self carries us to the extent of its usefulness and dies. We're then forced to put that once beloved skin to rest, to join it with the ground of spirit from which it came, so it may fertilize the next skin of self that will carry us into tomorrow. There's always grief for what's lost, and always surprise at what's to be born. But much of our pain in living comes from wearing a dead and useless skin, refusing to put it to rest, or from burying such things with the intent of hiding them rather than relinquishing them. For every new way of being, there's a failed attempt mulching beneath the tongue. For every sprig that breaks surface, there's an old stick stirring underground. For every moment of joy sprouting, there's a new moment of struggle taking root. We live, embrace, and put to rest our dearest things, including how we see ourselves, so we can resurrect our lives anew. For your meditation, try to identify one aspect of your way in the world that has outlived its usefulness, a way of thinking or feeling, of speaking or relating. Try to understand why you're still wearing it. On loose paper, journal what this outlived aspect is and why you are still wearing it. Take the paper and symbolically bury it somewhere special, giving thanks for how this outlived way has helped you to this point in your path. Be kind to the new space that burying this has opened in you. Water it, and keep it in the light. May 2nd. Live in your hands. Live in your hands, and your mind will learn to bow like a root. Many years ago, while doing a poetry reading in New York City, I encountered an angry young man who'd just seen a woman mugged. He was so enraged, he wrote a poem on the spot. A pensive voice from across the room called out, "Yeah, it sure beats stopping the mugging." I felt like there was nothing left to say. The story points up painfully how living in our thoughts removes us from the very real journey of being alive. To always analyze and problem-solve and observe and criticize what we encounter turns our brains into heavy calluses. Rather than opening us deeper into the mystery of living, the overtrained intellect becomes a buffer from experience. I have a dear friend who has studied almost all there is to study about the heart and the mind and its dance of psychology. And this study led her to a very old sage whose last instructions were, "Live in your hands." Once open to this, my dear friend, knowing nothing about stonework, found herself building a stone chapel in the side of a hill. In so doing, she consecrated the chapel that had been waiting in her heart. I have another friend who, whenever she sees flowers, must gently touch them. I've watched her countless times finger yellow petals. She needs to touch the beauty, and when she does, I can see the beauty touch her. Then something in her opens a little further. To live in our hands humbles our mind into accepting something other than itself. It's how we heal each other and ourselves. We all come alive through a braille of the heart. For your meditation, choose something small and delicate that fascinates you, and place it before you as you meditate. After a time, slowly take it in your hands and carefully examine it with your fingers, feeling its many surfaces. Breathe steadily and take the essence of this delicate thing into your mind through your hands. May 3rd. Our male and female energies. As it does no good to harvest if we can't eat, it does no good to act if we can't feel. There's so much talk these days of masculine and feminine energies and how we've been taught to be one-sided in how we engage the world. I believe most of it is true. When we are dominated by our male side, over-rational and stoic, never showing our feelings, our feminine side, our deeper, creative, receptive energies, becomes strident and stifled, explosive when finally allowed to surface. Not surprisingly, those who are contained and guarded, male or female, are somewhat frightened by those who are intuitive and expressive, just as those who are more readily impacted by what they feel find the unexpressive quite suffocating. Of course, we find each other, and the stoics grow nervous while the passionate sweat more. This is part of life. We find each other and pull. The spinning ever want the still to spin, the quiet hush the drums. The crazed are ever fated to entice statues to dance. We also struggle with these energies inside ourselves. My own experience has been quite telling. As a man who's always been quite active and decisive, I have also, as a poet, been deeply guided by the feminine, directed inwardly by the intuitive life of feeling. But clearly in the outer world, I was well schooled in being practical, taught never to linger in my feelings long. It is only after 21 years of surviving cancer and a life of overachievement that I've stumbled in and out of joy. In becoming more integrated, more a single wave of masculine and feminine, I can see that I am learning to use my male energies differently, more in concert with my feminine. Where I was taught to understand and name things, I now experience and feel things. Where I was taught to frame and articulate things at arm's length, I now embrace and absorb what's before me. This framing and naming at arm's length is part of how we have all been encased since childhood in a masculine way of seeing that out of balance is dry and uninformed by any passion for life. The difference is between painting a bird and flying, between understanding the secret positions of love and feeling your heart pound. Too often, under the guise of being asked to be prepared and mature, we're seduced into watching over living, into naming over feeling, into understanding over experiencing. Yet as two hands cup water to the mouth, we need both male and female energies to drink fully of this life. For your meditation, center yourself and breathe slowly. Place one hand before you, palm up, and meditate on all this hand contains, nerves, blood, memory, the power to lift and touch. Meditate on how complete this hand is unto itself. Place your other hand before you now, palm up, and meditate on all that it contains and how complete it is unto itself. Breathe deeply now and bring both of your hands together and meditate on how much more is possible when both completenesses work together. May 4th. Filling in the day.
I'm late for a very important date. No time to say hello, goodbye. I'm late.
The White Rabbit from Alice in Wonderland. I wake clear and rested, light flooding my room. The day seems endless and free, but making coffee I notice 3 bills I haven't paid, and after showering I notice I need a haircut. And since I'll be out that way, I think, well, I might as well pick up my shirts, but I so want to spend time in the sun. So I think, well, after these errands I'll go to the park, and then I deliberate which park will be just right and decide on one 40 minutes away. Finally, wanting to make sure there is some fun in all of this, I call a friend and plan to meet her at a movie at 6. Now I have to hurry along to make sure I can get everywhere on time. But thankfully, while gassing up, I hear a small bird and lift my head just as a cloud opens and the light floods my mind, and I drop all my plans like change on the ground. I laugh at myself. I can so easily become a slave to a schedule I create. Not one of these things is necessary today. I drop everything and follow the bird. For your meditation, bring to mind all you have to do today. Feel it crowd you. Center yourself and inhale each task slowly and exhale each urgency. Rise and enter this day as if it is your first and your last. Now, drop all that is not necessary. May 5th. Our essential clearness. Like clouds moving in water, problems make me forget I am clear. Water reflects everything it encounters. This is so commonplace that we think water is blue, when in fact it has no color. Amazingly, while soft and flowing, water, as ocean or lake or even as the smallest puddle of rain, takes on the image of the entire world without ever losing its essential clearness. Of course, it's not so easy for us. As emotional beings, we're constantly losing ourselves in the image of everything we experience. But nonetheless, the nature of water can help us understand our very human struggles. I began, like so many of us, in a household where it was somehow my job to be the lightning rod for the family's tensions of unexpressed emotion. In this way, I learned to be a problem solver, a rescuer, a caretaker. Through 2 marriages and countless friendships, I loved by taking on the clouded emotions of those I loved. The tension of other people's unexpressed emotions kept me from feeling my own depth and clarity. My life became one of turbulence, always struggling to keep my head above the cloudy surface. But the water, the glorious water everywhere, has taught me that we are more than what we reflect or love. This is the work of compassion, to embrace everything clearly without imposing who we are and without losing who we are. It is, to be sure, an endless and impossible task. But though we can never be as clear as water, it helps to remember that while the very real problems we face are the living things we must handle, they are not the essential current of our lives. Beneath the clouds, water desires only to flow. And beneath our tensions and problems, the human spirit wants only to embrace and soften. For your meditation, the next time a loved one voices frustration, disappointment, or pain, notice your reaction. Are you problem-solving or accepting what they're saying? Are you trying to cheer them up or bear witness to their experience? Are you left holding their pain or deepened for what is shared? If you can, receive this pain as if it were a stone dropped into the clear moving depth of who you are. May 6th. Twig and Nest. I think I could turn and live with animals. They do not sweat and whine about their condition. Not one is dissatisfied. Walt Whitman. It was a very small thing, watching a robin carry a twig too big for its nest. It tried once, then twice, to use it, and somehow with its very small bird brain, it knew it was no good. It simply flew off and picked another. I went and found the twig. There wasn't a mark on it. I rolled it in my hand and thought of all the times I've labored trying to make things too big fit. So often what we want is like that twig, too big to be of use, and we stay lodged in an unhappiness created by holding on to something that can't complete our nest. It was humbling to watch a small bird work, singing as it went, leaving what it couldn't use as it found it. If we could only treat each other with such simple kindness. For your meditation, meditate on your life as a nest that needs to be put together. Consider what you're after, what you're carrying, like a stubborn bird, that is too big to be of use. Can you put your life together more thoroughly by taking up some smaller version of what you need? Something that fits? May 7th. The Ordinary Art. Before fixing what you're looking at, check what you're looking through. It was a beautiful sun-filled day. I had driven 300 miles to see her. She was 94 and had been in one room for close to 8 months. I was her firstborn grandson, and she was so happy to see me. But after catching up, we sat in silence on the edge of her bed, and finally, she complained how gray a day it was. I realized then that her one window hadn't been cleaned in almost a year. When I said this, she chuckled, as only someone 94 can, and uttered with her Russian accent, "Got a dirty eye, see a dirty world." It's the same with our minds and hearts. For our very self is the one window we have into this life, and so often we suffer the mood of a dirty window, believing the brilliant world gray. Perhaps the purpose of authentic relationship is simply to help each other keep our minds and hearts clear. Perhaps inner work is the ordinary art of window washing, so that the day is fully the day. For your meditation, sit quietly until you feel centered. Now, use your breath to wash the ideas from your mind. Breathe evenly and wash the film from your heart. Breathe deeply and wash the conclusions from your eyes. May 8th. The Issue of Fairness. As long as we see what has come to pass as being unfair, we'll be a prisoner of what might have been. This is a very painful issue to discuss for most of us, because so much of how we see the world hinges on a sense of fairness and justice, those truly noble human concepts that govern how we treat each other. But the laws of experience in the natural world, in which we have no choice but to live, do not work this way. Rather, the larger universe, of which humankind is a small part, is a world of endless possibility and endless cycle. A world in which life forms come and go, a world itself that has erupted and reformed countless times. This is why the Hindu tradition has a deity known as Vishnu, who both destroys and bestows life, often in that order. Although fairness and justice are beautiful gravities by which we as human creatures try to live with one another, the storm and the germ, the termites eating the foundation of your home, the errant stone breaking your windshield, the waves swamping your little boat,
These molecules of experience do not understand what is fair. They just bombard us in the endless cosmic dance of life that just keeps happening. When I was struggling with cancer, I was asked repeatedly to release my anger at the injustice of having cancer. Quite honestly, I felt a great many things. I felt fear, pain, anxiety, frustration, uncertainty, and certainly exhaustion, but I did not feel that having cancer was unjust. When was I or anyone promised perfect health? An ant can struggle for yards with food in its mouth only to have a dead limb, tired of hanging on, crush it. What makes human beings presume to be exempt from such things? I know now that over the years, my own cries that life is unfair have come from the inescapable pain of living, and these cries, while understandable, have always diverted me from feeling my way through the pain of my breakage into the reformation of my life. Somehow crying unfair has always kept me stuck in what hurts. I offer what has surprised me in my pain, that life is not fair, but unending in its capacity to change us, that compassion is fair and feeling is just, and that we are not responsible for all that befalls us, only for how we receive it, and for how we hold each other up along the way. For your meditation, sit outside if possible, and watch the pollen carried on the wind. Meditate on how some of these pollen grains will become flowers, and how those flowers will wilt and seed other flowers yet to be. Meditate on how the human drama, with all its unknown turn of events, unfolds in much the same way. Breathe deeply and look at the many dreams and mistakes and joys and pains of your life as pollen on a larger wind. Some will grow, some will not. Do not deny your pain in experiencing life, but try not to heighten the hurt by labeling it tragic or unfair. Try to hold the pain of your changes with compassion rather than justice. May 9th, the fear of what is different. To direct the mind towards the basic unity of all things and to divert it from the seizing of differences, therein lies bliss. From the Tejo Bindu Upanishad. The eye can see what we have in common or focus on what keeps us apart. And the heart can feel what joins us with everything or replay its many cuts. And the tongue can praise the wind or warn against the storm, can praise the sea or dread the flood. It's not that there are no differences. The world is made of infinite variety. Rather, it's the seizing of differences, the fearing of differences, that keeps us from feeling grace. Paradoxically, everything in life touches the same center through its uniqueness, the way no two souls are the same, though every soul breathes the same air. When we fall into the illusion that one creation is better than another, we remove ourselves from the miracle of being and enter what the 6th century sage Tseng Tsan called the mind's worst disease. The endless deciding between want and don't want. The endless war between for and against. For your meditation, light a candle and sit quietly before a window. Relax your heart and breathe deeply. Notice the many different things that come into view. Trees, wind, clouds, the rattle of the window. People walking. Notice the candle and the quiet flame rising from it. Breathe calmly and imagine the same quiet flame rising within the heart of everything you see. May 10th, the edge